IRS on the Road, value-based parenting and life balance ideas from world-traveling family coaches. Here's Richard and Linda Iyer.
Hello, and welcome back to IRS on the Road. We are so happy to be on the road, even though it is April and we're in Christmas land here in Park City, Utah. It snows so much that it feels just like Christmas Eve here. But it's going to go away in just a few days. We'll enjoy it while it lasts.
We're trying to be perky and energetic today, even though we looked at the stock market this week and we're feeling very humble and poor.
Oh, 'tis the season. We won't go into politics, but it's crazy right now.
We live in uncertain times. There's no question about it. And you don't have to go very far to get a little bit concerned and depressed. All you have to do is turn on the news, and you can take your pick between the markets, between the weather problems, between climate change, between polarization going on everywhere.
And scriptures. You can make your choice. You could just read the scriptures.
Oh. Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Linda. Anyone listening can say, wow, Linda sounds so perky and happy and everything. How does she get that attitude? What do you do? What's your advice to me and to everyone listening if the circumstances of your life seem to be problematic? I mean, you know, whether it's big public things like the stock market or the worries about the world or the weather or whatever, or whether it's some personal crisis you're facing, how do you take your best attitude every day when things around you are trying to push you down?
Oh, I think you try to think of something else, right? I'm into genealogy. Wow, I've got a table laid out with all this genealogy from my family. My family was so fabulous to keep their genealogy. Yours was too, but in a different way. But I have these huge books that are 2 feet long and a foot wide, and just with piles of stories. Oh my goodness, I'm just thinking, we don't have any problems at all compared to these people.
So you look for perspective.
Right. Oh my goodness, I'm gonna be buried in this today, and I'm trying to sort out all the stuff that doesn't apply because I just have books and books and books. Anyway, it just makes me so grateful because we live in a time that's just so bright compared to their hard times. Oh my goodness.
Well, that's good. That's perspective. And I guess that, you know, there's the old adage that's so easy to say, but so hard to do sometimes, which is you should only worry about the things you can control and not about the things you can't control. And boy, we live in a world where there's a lot going on that affects us all that we can't control. We have no control over. So what we're supposed to do is focus on the things we can control. And hard as that is to do, I guess it really kind of comes down to our relationships, our stewardships, our family, our friends, the things that we really care about, although we know they're all affected by these other things that are going on too. So some days it's hard to get a bright face on and to get feeling optimistic, right?
Yeah, I think you're really depressed, honey. You rarely are, but wow. It is a crazy time in the world.
Well, relationships are what matters, and how to live your life and how to take care of the things you do have some influence or control over is always the best way to go. But I think I should just say this, honey. You know, some days you're not going to feel optimistic and happy every day. And sometimes it's things that are totally beyond your control. And I think one of the things we all have to do is just acknowledge the fact that we're gonna have our ups and downs. We're going to have our ups and downs emotionally. We're going to have our ups and downs mentally and physically and every other way, and that's part of life, and we have to learn to accept it. And I'm not making myself feel any better by saying this. I'm trying to.
Oh, come and read some genealogy with me, and it'll perk you right up, because The hard times, we don't even know what hard times are compared to the hard times they went through. They really, my great 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 grandfather was married to four wives. One of those
Jeez,
wives,
save me from
I
that.
mean, honestly, they it was such a hard life, and they were happy. I don't know why or how.
They didn't have the news.
They
They couldn't turn it on and see the stock market, or they couldn't.
No, but they had their life that was right in front of them. It was so hard. And apparently all four of those wives were pretty happy and pretty self-determining. They did what they had to make things work. I mean, really, that's the hard stuff.
Well,
Our hardest in
all right, I'll try to
life.
perk up a little bit and we will try to get to our topic for the day, which is actually pretty interesting. And it really ties in with this online course that we're gearing up to do. Many of you listeners know about it. We've talked about it on the show before. We're doing this online course called How to Live the Second Half of Life. And we've now got nearly 500 people signed up for it. It's the interest in it is beyond anything we could have imagined. And it's free. You just sign up on values. Well, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but those of you who are familiar with the Values Parenting website, you can just go there, and then the drop-down menu says Richard and Linda. And when you hit that drop-down menu, the first thing on it says how to live.
Well,
And
you better just say that if you don't want to go to the show notes, because I don't know how to get to show notes.
well,
Just valuesparenting.com.
anytime you listen to a podcast,
Yeah.
Linda, there are show notes, and you can go there.
Okay.
But yeah, I think what you said is good. And what we want to do is talk a little about one aspect of that course. And it is that we all need mentors. We all need people to guide us. And we want to talk a little today about mentors and be a little personal about who some of our mentors were over the years and still are in some cases. And we want to talk about whether we think the same way we used to in terms of needing a mentor, a mentor, I guess is the right way to say it, and how you find one if you don't already have one, and what they can do for you. I think back in the day that you're talking about, honey, when you say ancestors and genealogy and looking into their lives, the world ran a little differently, and almost everyone had. They were apprentices. If they wanted to learn a trade, they would sign on with someone, and that person became essentially their mentor and taught them the trade that they were going to learn, and they followed that person's path, and that was their path, and so on. Do you think we still live like that anymore? Do people, I mean, yeah, there's still some jobs where you do apprentice and so on, but do we? In this electronic age, in this age of social media and of connection electronically, do we still have mentors, or do we just get online and sort of envy each other and sort of feel depressed by the fact that our lives aren't as perfect as the ones we're looking at? I mean, the world's really changed in that regard.
Yeah, it really has. And as I think about my mentors, I think probably the people that influenced me most, even though I didn't realize that at the time, was my parents, who were both so amazing. And when you're growing up with parents, you don't get it. You don't quite get it, that they are amazing people, but they're teaching you things that you don't even realize that you're learning. My mother was totally proactive and outgoing and running programs of the church with youth and teaching school every day. My dad was a farmer. He was from this genealogy. He was born in 1892. That kind of dates me, but he
Well, people
was
have to know he was in his 50s when
52
you were
when
born.
I was born. But you look back at that and think, I learned so much from him just by the way he was. He was so calm and so never got upset at anything. And I know I've just been reading some of my classmates' history and their parents, and oh my goodness, they came from terrible, terrible
situations. Linda's in charge of her class reunion. We won't tell you what number it is, but just know that there's a lot of old people involved.
Well, you know, you go to, yes, there are. You go to school with these kids, and you don't realize why they're misbehaving or why they're strange or why they're upset. And sometimes you don't realize at all because they aren't. They seem like really good people, and then you realize a little bit about their background. I'm finding that one classmate's dad was abusing him, beating him up all the time. And another friend said her dad was an alcoholic. Nobody knew that while she was at high school. Nobody knew that. But she was really suffering. And I just think, wow, you know, your parents are a huge mentor if you're lucky enough to get great
Well,
parents.
I guess everyone has their parents as their first mentors. But did you think of it that way? Did you grow up thinking, I want to be just like my mom. That's my role model.
No.
That's my mentor.
No, I was mad at my mom about half the time because she made me practice and made me do hard things. No, you have to look back when you think, who mentored me? How did I become who I am?
So when you got it, when you left home, when you got into college, when you were going to school and university and so on, did you consciously have people you thought, that's my mentor, I'm going to ask them for advice, I'm going to follow my life, the pattern that they have followed?
Oh, I had a great teacher in high school. As you know, I talk about him all the time.
Yeah.
Mr. Lewis Monk, and he was so fabulous.
Mr. Monk was really your first mentor, wasn't
he? Yeah, he was, and he realized it because he was a great teacher. He was my English teacher, and we had an accelerated English class that was like none that you've ever heard of, even in AP classes. It was amazing. We were learning 50 vocabulary words a week. We had a theme every night. 3-page typewritten on an old dumb typewriter. We read, we learned to do newspaper articles. He was so demanding, but absolutely everyone loved him. Well, not everyone loved him, but so many people were affected by his life.
You know, it's so interesting because I don't remember thinking of anyone as a mentor in high school. Maybe my Uncle Vern in some regards, but I remember right away, my LDS mission in New York City, where I spent the 2 years between 19 and 21, I was surrounded by leaders in the church who were also CEOs of major Fortune 500 companies. And I began to think I wanted to move in that direction. I began to think of some of these men as mentors. I ended up doing something that's pretty impossible to do today in our church, but I stayed, after I was released from my mission, I stayed in New York City for nearly a month, just going around to these various CEOs and saying, listen, I need some advice. I'm finishing my mission. I'm going back into school. Here's my questions. What would you do? I had an intense almost month long of mentoring from these business CEOs who were so far beyond my comprehension in life that I could barely believe it. But one of the things I learned is that when you ask someone for advice, that is a huge compliment to that person, because you're essentially saying, I want to be like you. And people were very forthcoming. And I came home, and it changed my life in a lot of different ways. But I think mainly our main mentors over the years have been couples who we've come to identify with and who sort of mentored us in raising our family and in our marriage and in our parenting and so on. So let's take a little, what are you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say, I hope that we're digging some memories out of your mind as you're listening to this, because we don't think about our mentors often enough. I think of one girl in high school that never knew she was my mentor, but she was going around helping everyone,
she's
being
kind
kind
of your
to
idol,
everyone, finding people who really needed help, and then sitting by them, encouraging them. And I never told her that she was really making an impact on my life, but she really was. So I think there are things that people that affected us that we need to think about occasionally and really dig in and think, can we be mentors to others? So with that, let's...
In the second half of the show, we're going to talk more about that and remembering our mentors, the past, in other words, but we're also going to talk about the present and the future, depending on what age or life stage you're in now. Where do you find mentoring? Where do you find someone to look up to, someone to follow? And of course, there's a lot of religion and spirituality that comes into that question, because maybe we would all say that Jesus is the ultimate mentor and so on, but on a personal level. So we'll explore that a little further. Stay with us. We'll be right back on Ayers on the Road.
Welcome back to Ayers on the Road. Here's Richard and Linda Ayer.
And we're back. Talking about mentors today, we haven't thought about this for a long time. I haven't. I've heard you talk a lot about mentors in your life, but...
Well, it became a really big deal to me in that little one-month stretch that I mentioned in New York City, and I got so much advice. It changed everything. It changed what I majored in college. It changed where I thought I wanted to go. It changed where I wanted to go to graduate school. It was remarkable. I mean, and these were high-powered business individuals. They may have had too much influence over me now that I think back of it, but there was the CEO of Lord & Taylor, the CEO of Borden, the CEO of Phillips Petroleum, the CEO of RCA. There were a lot of, you know, this was Manhattan. This was in the 60s, the late 60s, and they were impressive people, and they influenced me a great deal. And I asked them some pretty personal questions, and I hadn't realized it till now that we're just talking, but that kind of set a pattern for me of where I was sort of emboldened to sort of pick out people that I admired in some way and just ask them privately and one-on-one, what do you, you know, what advice could you give me? Here's my situation. What would you do? And that led, I think, to you and I, as we were courting. Remember we spent, after we were engaged, we spent a fair amount of time going around and talking to couples that we really admired, and essentially saying, hey, we're babes in the woods, we're young, we're getting married. What's your marital advice? What's your family advice? It was amazing how forthcoming people were.
Yeah, they were really, I think, really pleased to make time for us to talk about how they could help us. It was really pretty interesting. I mean, it wasn't a handful of people. We didn't run around every weekend talking about maybe three or four.
Yeah.
But it was really enlightening, because they were so far down the road and had accomplished a lot of amazing things. And not that we ever thought that we could do what they had done, but we just needed their input on what direction we wanted to go.
And many of those, I'm thinking, we hadn't talked about this before the show, but it's interesting to think back. Many of those couples that we went to for marital advice before we got married, during our engagement, became lifelong mentors for us.
Yeah,
let's mention some of them, because we owe them so much. We can at least give them the credit. I had Stephen Covey for a professor at BYU 1 year, and got to just idolize him, mostly the way he could write and the way he could take complex things and make them simple. And of course, later that became his hallmark. I mean, he wrote a book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's probably the best-selling self-help book in history.
And then he wrote a lot more after that.
A lot more after that. But remember when we were engaged, going to he and his wife, Sandra. Why do I have a trouble with Sandra and Sandra?
Trouble.
But Stephen and Sandra would, you know, they're so gracious, and we'd ask for their advice, and they'd tell us what they thought about what we should be prioritizing in marriage and so on.
We met him at a Chinese restaurant once a year or something like that.
And that went on for such a long time.
And we didn't even realize his input until we were traveling all over the world doing speaking, and we were following him in some cases. And people would tell us things like, oh, poor Dr. Covey, he would go in the restroom in China, and somebody would inevitably come up to his stall and just slide a book under the...
Please sign this book for me.
Please, Dr. Covey, please sign this for me. Anyway, we thought that was really fun and interesting. But yeah, they really did make a difference, and it was a matter of making an appointment and just talking, and for that specific purpose of asking questions.
And another couple that comes to mind, of course, is Truman and Ann Madsen. And we went to them before we were married, and they became lifelong mentors. Then we ended up, while we were at Harvard and in Boston, they were there, and so that relationship continued. And then when we were all four back in Utah, we would meet with them regularly, and you know, that became almost a two-way street, because Truman would ask for input on some of the things he was doing, and we'd share back and forth. And but
George and Lenore Romney, were really fun.
Well,
we didn't know them well, but we did.
Well,
we did have some.
I knew George well. I mean, my first real job while I was still in college was working in George Romney. I mean, some of you, this will test your memory. Who people know Mitt Romney, who's our good friend, and Ann, but his dad, Mitt's dad, George, ran for president in 1968, and I was a college student who, and I loved politics in those days. I promise you, it was a more noble pursuit than it is now. And I went to Michigan to meet George and to tell him I wanted to help him in his presidential campaign. I was pretty bold for a college kid.
Yeah, you were.
But he needed the help, and I became his national student chairman. And that was just such a great relationship. And he was so forthcoming on his advice and his mentoring. In fact, you know, I might as well just say it. I thought I wanted to go to law school. I wanted to go into politics, and I don't know if I really thought that, but I was certainly thinking about it. What's the best preparation if you want to be in politics? And George said, look, you know, it's we've got too many lawyers in politics. What politics needs, the U.S. Senate, the U.S. Congress, it needs administrators, people that can run things. Why don't you go to business school instead? And that really, I mean, profoundly influenced my life, our lives. That was when you and I were still dating. But then, like you say, we got to know his wife, Lenore, a little, and they became mentors.
Yeah, well,
we don't want to sound like we're bragging about who our mentors were, but we fell into these things.
I was just thinking you should not probably tell that story. We're going to go down to BYU next week and speak to the young couples at the business school, and they invited their law school friends too. You better not tell them that story. But there's
well,
great things about
maybe
both
occupations.
Maybe
some of them will change.
No. But it is really fascinating how our lives really literally changed by some of the things that people taught us that we admired on the way through.
I had another mentor, and you did too a little bit. And again, we're not name dropping. We were just so lucky and fortunate to fall under the influence of some really illustrious, sort of almost iconic people. And I'm talking about Neil Maxwell, who was an apostle in our church and was just such an amazing guy, and long before he was in that position, when he was still in education,
you were in politics.
Well, and he had been in politics. He was the administrative assistant to Senator Wallace Bennett, who's the father of Senator Robert Bennett, who many of you will remember and know. But Neil Maxwell had worked there in Washington, and I was there as an intern, and not while he was there, but followed him in that same office and had come to know him a little. And the thing that this brings me to a point, that when you ask people for advice and essentially ask them to be your mentor and to counsel you on things, different people take different approaches, right? And what I think of whenever I think of Neil Maxwell is he had a unique style of answering questions. So many people, when you ask for advice, will say essentially, well, you should consider this and you should take this into account and you don't want to forget about this. And they'll sort of go around the edges, but they're hesitant, and I think rightly so, in saying, well, you've told me what you think on this decision. This is what I think you should do. Make this choice. Do this thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty rare because it's so risky.
No, they don't really do that.
Because people don't really know all of the parameters. But Neil Maxwell was an exception to that, because I remember a couple occasions where I'd ask him on a decision or on a career thing or something, and he would listen, he'd ask questions, he'd probe a little, and he'd sort of make comments as we'd go along. And then he would say, now look, Rick, you've got to make this decision. I can't make it for you. There's probably things you don't know. But based on what you've told me, this is what I'd do. And he would go out on a limb and say, and then he'd back off a little and he'd say, now, again, if that rings true to you, good. That's just take my input as one of the things that you're weighing here and be critical about it. But I just think from what you've told me, this is the course you ought to take. And that was really, really helpful, because then I would see, oh, wow, there's some things I haven't thought of that I should do before I make that decision, right?
Right, so. Right. Yeah, this has made me think of a lot of people who influenced my life and may never have even known about it.
Because
I didn't have a meeting with them or anything, but I just watched them and figured out who they were. And it really, really is so interesting. And I'm just thinking right now, are we too old to have mentors now?
Well, that's a good question.
I think not. I think some of my mentors are younger. Now, I mean, young people that I admire, and not that I want to be young again, but just that they have good ideas, they have active minds, they have things, you know, ideas that work and that are stimulating and make me think of new ideas and things to do.
Well, and that's what we're thinking about in this course, this How to Live course. One of the things we're saying to the people who are joining is, look, this group, this course on how to live the autumn and winter stages of our lives, in these circles, in this course, we need to mentor each other, because
right.
We don't have someone 20 years older than us we can say, how is life when you're 95 or something? You know, we have to, maybe some people do, but we need to mentor each other in groups. We need to have groups that help us examine our lives and to make them better and so on. And so one of the ways we're positioning this course, again, we'll put it in the show notes, How to Live the Second Half of Life, but we're getting on in an Instagram group and an email group and so on to share our perception, our context, our paradigms with other people, so we can mentor each other, learn from each other, and continue to stir the pot, continue to try to find better ways to approach it when we wake up like I did this morning and feel depressed because of the stock market or whatever. That's silly, but we need to have that, and mentoring each other can be powerful. And we also, if we are in the autumn season of our life, we ought to be thinking, I feel guilty. I have not mentored other people as well as some of my mentors mentored me. And so I guess maybe see what you think of this, honey. What are we really saying here? If you're a younger person, and younger meaning in the first half of your life, I think, be emboldened to go and ask advice and guidance and help on decisions and so on from other people who you look up to. Don't be intimidated and think, well, they're too busy, they're too important. Go to them, because asking for advice or for some kind of mentoring is a huge compliment to another person. If you're somewhere in the middle of life, continue that. Continue to find people who you can... excuse me, who you can seek and look for advice. And if you are older, who can you mentor? Who can you help?
Well, it really is such a fun thing to ask people questions, to share a little bit of their lives, to figure out how, what makes them tick. And this thing becomes reciprocal because you can talk with them and get great ideas from them, and they can get great ideas from you. I just think you're never too old to get new ideas and to express your opinions. I'm just working with just a small group of relatively young mothers, mid-age mothers, just on a Zoom call next weekend. It's just going to be so interesting to me to see how they feel, where they are right now, and to really work together on some ways that we can go forward with more excitement and more joy and the things that life is really made for.
I think you ended that perfectly, honey. There's this old phrase that says, small minds talk about people. Medium minds talk about things. Great minds talk about ideas. And one of the things about mentoring, whether you're on the giving end or the receiving end, you're talking about ideas, you're talking about life, you're talking about concepts, you're talking about where you're trying to go. And it gets you so much deeper than the surface level conversations that we have so often, the small talk or the social media that just sort of fills up our consciousness and there's nothing substantive about it.
Right. Yeah, it's exciting. It keeps life exciting. So we hope we've stirred up something in your mind to think, who were my mentors? Who can I mentor? And how can I feel more joy by exchanging ideas with other people? And so with that, we'll leave you this time and hope that you'll join us again on Myers on the Road.
Bye till next week.